From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Caroline Hobenstricker, an intern with VOA's Current Affairs Desk and a student of journalism and global and intercultural studies at Miami University of Ohio. She's working with us as assistant producer this month. Our guest, Frances Lee, professor of politics and public affairs at Princeton University and co-author of the recently published book, The Limits of Party, Congress and Lawmaking in a Polarized Era. Her research has appeared in the American Political Science Review, Perspectives on Politics, American Journal of Political Science, and many other outlets. She's the recipient of numerous awards in the area of legislative studies. On this edition of the program, Professor Lee will talk with us about her most surprising findings, including the idea that Congress is less dysfunctional than typically thought, and that the passage of bipartisan legislation is still commonplace. According to a recent New York Times opinion editorial, Frances Lee and co-author David Curry assert, quote, "Divided government sometimes overperforms expectations. Unified governments, on the other hand, usually end in disappointment for the party in power. The harsh truth about the U.S. political system is that very little legislation gets enacted without bipartisan support." Closed quote. This week, Democrats Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff won two close Senate races in the southern state of Georgia, flipping the Senate, the upper chamber of Congress, from Republican to Democratic control. We'll talk with Professor Lee, who has also worked on Capitol Hill as an American Political Science Association Congressional Fellow from 2002 to 2003, about this important development. Many political analysts assert that the incoming Biden administration will actually benefit from unified government, even as it seeks and will need bipartisan support for legislative proposals. We'll also elicit Professor Lee's reaction to the storming of U.S. Congress by pro-Trump supporters opposed to what is normally a pro forma ceremonial process of certification of Joe Biden's presidential victory. And Professor Frances Lee joins us via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm delighted to welcome my colleague, Caroline Hobenstricker.
Hello. Thanks for having me as well.
Well, Professor Lee, I'd love to get your reaction to the events we witnessed on January 6th. Some political observers say we're at a turning point. Hundreds of Trump supporters angry about the fact that the Congress was about to officially affirm Joe Biden's electoral victory, which was actually certified on December 14, 2020, by the states who run our elections, stormed the Capitol building. This left several people dead, wounded, and it really stunned lawmakers and citizens across the country. What is your reaction?
I mean, we haven't seen anything like that in our lifetimes. In fact, nothing like that has happened at the U.S. Capitol. But I see it as flowing from the president's refusal to acknowledge defeat in the elections. Basically, what Congress was doing on January 6th was confirming that loss. And Republicans in the Congress were, in that sense, being asked to concede on the president's behalf effectively. This is normally, as you mentioned, just a ceremonial process. You know, almost vestigial from a time when the ballots needed to be brought in on horse and buggy and opened and counted. Of course, we all knew the outcome of the elections, and, you know, there was no doubt as to, you know, what Congress was being asked to do. We knew what the electoral count was. But the meaning of that ceremony had shifted because the president had not conceded. And that's what caused that session to take on such outsized importance. The president also had invited to come to the Capitol his supporters to rally on this day and had encouraged them to go to the Capitol after that rally at the Ellipse. So we can see how this came to be and how it occurred, what the political logic of it was, and why that session took on outsized meaning. you know, as it's played out, it has effectively become the acknowledgement that the transition of power will occur. And in my view, the most significant feature of what happened in the early morning hours of January 7th was that most Republicans in the Senate, a large majority of Republicans in the Senate, acknowledged the legitimacy of the transition of power. That did not happen in the House of Representatives, however. A majority of House Republicans did not assent to the election outcome. So it's not a, you know, the verdict that we have from Congress is not a uniform acknowledgement of the legitimacy of the election outcome.
We're going to get more into that and the implications of what happened in a moment, but let me turn to your book called The Limits of Power, Congress and Lawmaking in a Polarized Era. And I think we have to underscore the word polarized. What was the impetus for this book, which was co-authored by you and James Curry? And how did you reach your conclusions?
Our book is aimed at asking a simple question. What does the rise of partisan conflict and the centralization of power in legislative party leaders, what does that mean for lawmaking? How has that shaped lawmaking outcomes in national government? We knew that the processes in Congress had changed dramatically, that roll call votes in Congress break down on party lines to a much greater extent than they used to. And the parties are much more unified, much more cohesive. They vote together in opposition to one another to a much greater extent than in the past. We know that party leaders are much more central to the process, that the committees are not where a lot of the most significant legislation gets worked out these days. So we knew that the process had changed, but our question was, how much difference does this make for legislative outcomes? We were interested in whether there has been an increase in the tendency of legislation to be passed with the support of only one party, or of legislation to be passed on party line votes. And we also wanted to know whether majority parties in the contemporary, more partisan era are better at accomplishing their legislative agendas. And what we found surprised us, that there has been no increase in the frequency with which Congress legislates on narrow party line votes. Legislation still passes with bipartisan support. In fact, to the same degree that it did in the 1970s and 1980s, a much less party polarized time. So what this means is that the tremendous rise of party conflict that we see in Congress is not on outcomes, that bipartisan negotiation is still necessary to legislate. Second key finding is the majority party in the contemporary Congress is not more effective at achieving its legislative goals and enacting its platform than it was in less polarized periods. This is true even under conditions of unified control, that parties, when they possess unified control of government, as the Republicans did in President Trump's first 2 years, are not more successful than Congresses with unified control in earlier periods, that they still fail about half the time, including on their top priority agenda items, just as we saw with the, you know, the Republican Congress in President's first year in 2017. They were able to pass their major tax reform and tax cut legislation, but they failed on their first legislative priority, which was to repeal and replace Obamacare. That is a typical pattern. That sort of encapsulates what we see parties fail about half the time, even when they have unified control. And they rarely legislate on narrow party line votes. So we have the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We have Obamacare. You know, those two are, you know, signature pieces of legislation that pass without any cross-party support. But in our research, Jim and I only found 12 such examples of top agenda priorities passed by a majority party without cross-party support, dating back to the Reagan years. This rarely happens, and it does not happen with more frequency. It's not emblematic of how Congress works. More emblematic of how Congress works was the CARES Act, which was the first major legislation passed in response to the pandemic, broad bipartisan support. Significant legislation sweeping, the largest stimulus package in American history, and yet passed, you know, with tremendous support across the aisle, both parties. That's the norm. That's how legislation by and large passes even now. It's not well understood. Congress's partisanship and partisan conflict in Congress is something that gets a great deal of news coverage. And Congress's tendency to resolve that conflict with legislation commanding broad bipartisan support is not understood, but remains a feature of how our national government works.
That's really fascinating. Well, before we go to a break, let me turn to my colleague Caroline Haubenstricker for a question.
Professor Lee, regarding your recent New York Times op-ed where you state that Senate majorities are overrated, do you think that an exception to that sentiment is warranted given how much Republican opposition there has been to President-elect Biden's certification as the winner of the election? In his case, isn't it more advantageous that Democrats, thanks to the election of two Democratic senators from Georgia, now hold a slim majority, enabling the Biden administration to more successfully enact at least part of their legislative agenda?
No doubt the Biden administration welcomes the outcomes of the Senate races in Georgia that afford Democrats majority control, bare majority control of the Senate. And it will be very helpful to the Biden administration in executive branch and judicial appointments. But when it comes to legislation, there won't be much legislation that passes on narrow party line votes with Democrats only in the majority and in support. That rarely happens. President Biden may be able to work with the Democratic majorities in the House and the Senate to pass a budget reconciliation package on a simple party line vote. That can happen. We've seen that happen in a number of recent presidencies. But that tends to be about it in terms of legislation that passes without cross-party support. So that was how the Republicans passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act under President Trump. But that is not emblematic of how they legislated more generally. And in fact, that's the one case of significant legislation passing on narrow party lines. So Democratic activists, progressives who look to the outcome in Georgia and expect that Democrats will be able to achieve sweeping change on the basis of Democrats-only support are likely to be disappointed. There isn't a precedent for that, even in recent polarized Congresses with unified control, that first there's the Senate filibuster, which remains in place for all legislation aside for budgets. So this requires bipartisan support in order to clear the cloture threshold in the Senate and bring debate to a close.
Define for our international audience filibuster very quickly.
Filibuster is when senators block measures from coming to a vote. And even when they might otherwise pass, you know, where there's a majority for the measure, that it's possible for a senator to block it from coming to a vote unless the supporters of the measure can garner 60 votes. This is sometimes is referred to as the 60-vote Senate, meaning a supermajority is necessary in order to force a vote. And so the ability to delay or to deny supporters the opportunity to bring their measures to a vote, to use the Senate's procedures permitting extended debate to deny that opportunity, that's a filibuster. It's critical for understanding the role of the Congress in our political system, that the filibuster has emerged as a mechanism that forces bipartisanship in the Senate. To the extent that parties in the House and the Senate are similar, the fact that a minority party in the Senate can use the filibuster to block measures from coming to a vote, that forces bipartisanship, you know, across the Congress, not just in the Senate alone.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Francis Lee, professor of politics and public affairs at Princeton University and author of the new book, The Limits of Party, Congress and Lawmaking in a Polarized Era. She joins us via Microsoft Teams as we continue to practice social distancing. I'm Carol Castiel, along with assistant producer Caroline Haubenstricker. And this is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, here's a shout out to one of our most loyal listeners, Tony Zola from Bangkok, Thailand. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest, Francis Lee. And Professor Lee, I'd like you to address the fate of the Republican Party. You said earlier that Democrats and Republicans have been pretty cohesive, voting along party lines of late on legislation. But I wonder if you would reconsider that thought in light of today's events, in light of the political landscape. The Republican Party seems somewhat riven from within. You know, we see some are supporting indulging President Trump's fantasy, many analysts say, that he won, that he didn't lose the election. They tried to delay the certification of President-elect Biden as the winner of the election. Some are saying that President Trump is sabotaging the Republican Party on his way out of the office. You know, how do you see the Republican Party going forward and then its role in legislation going forward?
I don't think we can extrapolate from these remarkable events of this week to how Republicans will behave going forward, that Republicans were uniquely cross-pressured as they weighed what to do in the wake of the 2020 elections and President Trump's refusal to concede. On the one hand, President Trump is the leader of their party. He commands broad support among Republicans in the electorate, and Republicans in the electorate believed the president when he said that the election had been stolen. So those are their constituents who they represent. So they feel pressure to represent those constituents who believe they've been defrauded. On the other hand, the constitutional role of the Congress in counting electoral votes submitted by states is quite limited, that elections are handled at the state level. Election administration is handled at the state level. And so there was very little Congress can do that Republican members could do in response under the Constitution. So they have their constitutional role on the one hand, running up against their partisan role and the need to be responsive to their constituents and to the leadership of their own party. And so this was uniquely difficult representational dilemma for Republicans. I don't think that that persists after the Trump presidency is over. And instead, I think Republicans will find themselves in less cross-pressured circumstances as a minority party in both House and Senate in reaction to an administration, also not of their party. That's a less difficult set of circumstances. They can oppose. They can go back to being the party of limited government and of lower government spending, and they can oppose large deficits. In fact, I suspect they'll be less cross-pressured now than they were in the Trump years, where the need to respond to the economic devastation of the pandemic led them to support levels of government spending that they were uncomfortable with, that they will not feel the same pressure to do that as a minority party. They'll expect Democrats to carry a larger share of the burden of governance in a Democratic administration. So I think this is a unique moment that we've seen here in the power transition that doesn't generalize to the future for the Republican Party, that their circumstances change dramatically when Trump is no longer president.
All right. I think we have a follow-up from Caroline on that very topic. Caroline.
Yes. So, Professor Lee, analysts, including President Trump's former Homeland Security Advisor, Tom Bassert, are saying that the breach of the U.S. Capitol building and the previous breaches of state capitol buildings, like in the state of Michigan, is because President Trump has been trying to delegitimize President-elect Joe Biden's victory. To what extent will these events have an impact on bipartisanship in Congress? And are the Republicans more likely or less likely to cooperate with the Democratic majorities in the House of Representatives and the Senate?
Well, we have to see how accepting of the legitimacy of President Biden Republicans, both in the electorate and the Congress, will be. My expectation is that there will be more similarity between the Republican behavior under President Obama and what we'll see under President Biden, that President Obama's legitimacy was not uniformly recognized by Republicans in Congress. And there were many Republicans who doubted that President Obama had been born in the United States, that, you know, that those beliefs were, you know, reasonably widely held among Republicans in Congress during the Obama years. So the idea that up until the Biden administration, the out party has always recognized the legitimacy of the president, that would be an exaggeration. But I also see what happened on January 6th and 7th in the Senate as quite significant in conferring legitimacy on a President Biden, that when you have nearly all Senate Republicans accepting the Electoral College votes. And you have quotations like such as those from Senator Lindsey Graham saying that President Biden and Vice President Harris were lawfully elected. So I think that the legitimacy of the Biden administration was shored up considerably by what happened in the Senate, you know, in counting the Electoral College votes. So my answer is that Biden will not be uniformly accepted as legitimate by Republicans, but I think there's a critical mass there that will acknowledge the legitimacy and will be willing to cooperate in the same or roughly the same manner in which they have cooperated with other recent Democratic presidents.
I'd like to follow up with another question. So in your book, The Limits of Party, Congress and Lawmaking in a Polarized Era, you conclude that there is more intra-party disagreement than people think. This seems very relevant with respect to the current Democratic and Republican parties. Can you expand on how the current intra-party rifts may affect the ability to pass legislation under the incoming Biden administration?
Yes, this is a fact about our contemporary parties that's not widely appreciated, that because the parties are in most cases able to maintain their ranks on controversial issues that come to a vote in Congress, there's a tendency to assume that that means that they march in lockstep. But in general, when a party that controls the Congress cannot reach agreement within its own ranks, it doesn't bring the matter to a vote. And so you don't see the internal divides within the party play out on the floor of Congress because they don't tend to move forward on matters on which there's internal disagreement. That's what made, incidentally, looking back, the Republican failure on repeal and replacing Obamacare most stunning, that they did that in open and, you know, failed on the floor in high-profile votes. Usually a party will not do that. If it hasn't reached internal agreement, it won't bring the measure to a vote. So what Democrats would be asked to do if they wanted to try to legislate without any cross-party support is to maintain perfect party unity. All Democratic senators would have to agree. And there are some quite moderate members of the Democratic caucus who represent states that lean towards the opposing party. So it will not be easy to accommodate all the divergent perspectives within the Democratic Party. In the Senate, that would require perfect party unity. In the House, it will require nearly perfect party unity. You know, the Democratic majority in the House is extraordinarily narrow in the upcoming Congress, like 222 votes. So what are the issues on which literally every Democrat agrees? It's not a long list. And it's certainly not a long list of issues on which that are highly controversial, on which the parties, you know, the Democratic Party can, you know, reach perfect agreement. You take climate change, for example. Even when Democrats had large majorities, as they had under President Obama in 2009 and 2010, they could not successfully legislate on climate change. They got a bill out of the House of Representatives, but only because they had some Republican support. There were so many Democratic defections on that issue. They never came close to getting all Democrats on the same page in the Senate. So most of the time when a party is able to unify itself entirely around an agenda item, it also has cross-party support. It's not that controversial. And so I think what you should expect to see in the 117th Congress, the upcoming Congress, President Biden's first 2 years in office, is that very little legislation will pass if it doesn't have broad support, which has been the norm. And so the question then is, what can leaders put forward that commands broad support, not just can unify Democrats? And so that you know, that needs to be, you know, if you're, you know, you're seeking to understand, you know, where we're likely to go in policy terms in the coming years, that legislation with that character, that ability to command support that extends beyond the majority party, that needs to be what we look to. And in many cases, that happens as a result of events, crises. What enabled Congress to agree on the sweeping legislation in the CARES Act in March 2020, or for that matter, the legislation that ended the Trump presidency, both in funding the government for the coming year and another coronavirus aid package? It was the sense that something must be done and that both parties agree action is needed. They may disagree on the scope of action. There may need to be hard bargaining, but fundamentally both parties agree that action needs to be taken. That's when Congress acts, by and large. And so to look to those areas of consensus where both parties recognize the need for congressional action, that's where you see Congress move. And it's very hard to move Congress in the absence of that kind of consensus. This is something President Biden understands well with his long experience working in Congress. You know, he has said that if you can't get a consensus up here, that all you get is abuse of power by the executive. He said that during the campaign, and he's right about that. That's how Congress works. Congress is a bicameral body. It's very hard to move it, and it usually takes broad consent, broad support in order to move it. And a president who understands that is better positioned to lead the country in a closely divided time and a time where, you know, no shortage of crises that need addressing.
That is so true, Professor Lee. And as you said, President-elect Biden knows better than many as this longtime senator, and he has always pushed for bipartisanship. And he has a relatively good relationship, we understand, with now minority leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate. He will be the minority leader now that the Democrats gained those two extra seats from Georgia. So that will probably help. But I would like to remind our listeners that Will Rogers, an actor who passed away in early 20th century, said, "I am not a member of any organized political party. I am a Democrat." I think that little adage, you know, remains true to this day. It is a broad, you know, big tent party. We have the so-called Democratic Socialists, a few of them, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and of course, Senator Bernie Sanders, who isn't even a registered Democrat. But really, the majority are, I would say, moderate center-left, and we're seeing more of that tendency in the Democratic Party. So let me ask you as we close, Professor Lee, you know, in the 117th Congress, what are, in your view, the prospects for enacting legislation? Where do you think we can find convergence? Particularly, you know, we're dealing with a pandemic still. It seems as if there may be no shortage of issues on which consensus can be found. But what are your thoughts? Are you cautiously optimistic?
I think that the pandemic dominates this first year for President Biden. So there will be need for additional aid for the unemployed and for affected small businesses and for vaccine distribution and to reopen the schools. That, you know, the list of challenges associated with responding to the pandemic is just fearsome. And congressional action is needed there. Congress is power of the purse. So Congress must be consulted and must be brought in, you know, in order to act in these areas. So I expect to see action on those issues. And I think that there is sufficient support across the aisle for that to command the usual and necessary bipartisan support for Congress to act. I'm not sure beyond that where the prospects lie, but I wouldn't underrate the potential for agreement to be reached. That a great deal happened over the past 4 years under President Trump, even though I don't think anybody would regard President Trump as, you know, as a highly, you know, effective legislative negotiator. And yet a great deal of significant legislation passed in recent years. And I don't think anybody would have said at the start of 2017 that there's a long list of issues on which Republicans and Democrats agree. And yet a great deal occurred. So I think, you know, we shouldn't assume that just because it's difficult for us to say, you know, where their agendas overlap, that they cannot, in response to felt need on the part of the country and their constituents, come together on important matters.
Frances Lee is professor of politics and public affairs at Princeton University, and she's co-author of the acclaimed book, The Limits of Party, Congress and Lawmaking in a Polarized Era. Professor Lee, thanks so much for sharing your insights about your book and obviously your reactions to the unprecedented events in recent days. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. And joining me on the program was Caroline Hobenstricker. She's assistant producer at the Current Affairs Desk. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.